Friday, the Jets Collective is on the air. My name is Jake Asman alongside BT, Brandon Tierney, and ESPN's Rich Samini. We are back with another episode. As always, the Jets Collective is presented by Prize Picks. A lot to get into. Rich, you were at the Jet facility yesterday for the first public open OTA for the media. By public, just really the media that can watch. So we got a lot to get into there. The Knicks are inspiring the Jets. BT, I know you and I are pumped about our Knicks. We got some time off before the finals. How are we feeling, gentlemen?
Feeling good. I mean, Rich got a little shiner. What did Aaron Glenn throw a little cross on you? What's up with the eye there, Richie?
You're not the first person who mentioned that to me, but we had a little softball incident on Tuesday morning, guys. A little bad hop caught me in the eye, but I am fine. Didn't miss any softball and certainly wouldn't miss OTAs. And wouldn't miss this for the world.
By the way, you know, hey, Jake, that's probably from Costello giving him the Italian horns, right? You guys were talking.
Yeah, we had some words over that for sure. But this was strictly a sports injury here.
There could be a big rumble between Rich and Kaz at the Gangrene Beach Club outing in Atlantic City. So people got to get their tickets to watch that. Who knows? As far as OTAs go, obviously, Aaron Glenn spoke, as did a couple of the Jets players. Garrett Wilson speaking for the first time about his new quarterback. Geno speaking, DeMario speaking. It's like we're back in 2013 all over again. So, Rich, we'll start with you with this. What was the biggest takeaway that you personally had being out there yesterday and taking in OTAs?
Well, let me set the scene for you guys. So we get out there for practice to watch this. We're out there at 12:33 specific starting time. And as soon as we get out there, this dark clouds start moving in over the field. The wind kicks up. It must have been 40 mile an hour winds. There were some raindrops. It was like something out of a horror movie. And of course, there was some wisecracks, you know, read into that what you will. Jets under the dark cloud, yada, yada, yada. But so my takeaways other than the weather were, one, I always look for like injuries and the health of players. And so a couple of guys who were injured last year, one, you mentioned him, Jake, Garrett Wilson, completely healthy, looked fine out there. That's important. Braylon Allen, you know, who had a significant knee surgery last year. He looked terrific. He was out on the field. He had a couple of nice runs to the outside, so he looked fine. And Azarrie Thomas, the cornerback who had shoulder surgery, he was out there wearing number one, reminding me of Sauce Gardner. It's just kind of ingrained in my mind. But so those were the key takeaways. And the other takeaway was just afterwards, like talking to players, and especially Geno and Garrett Wilson, and just how much they appreciate Frank Reich and how much they like about his system. And I'm writing about it for ESPN.com, so be sure to check that out on Sunday. But I just feel like a belief in Frank Reich. And I think a part of that is because of his playing experience, having played the position. Garrett Wilson mentioned that specifically. So those were my main takeaways, other than keeping the corny stats that we all keep and everything like that. It's really kind of meaningless. I look at injuries and what the players are saying.
I don't want to hear meaningless. Cade Klubnik, 4-for-4, sevens, 4-for-4, 11s. Listen, I'm obviously not there. That's why Rich brings us all the great stuff, as he has forever. Can you detect a slightly different pace or juice or tone from, say, last year or previous iterations, previous coaches, previous Jet OTAs?
BT, that's hard to say. I mean, these practices look the same to me. I mean, I know Glenn said they're trying some different things, but they really didn't do a whole lot of stuff. Now, Klubnik did look fine. The ball did not hit the ground when he was playing, either in even the sevens or the 11s. He didn't really have any high degree of difficulty passes. They were really short to intermediate kind of throws. I'd say the one takeaway that Klubnik I really liked is he was making a lot of full field reads. I mean, I could see him going through his progression, boom, boom, boom. And so he was doing that. So that tells me he's very, you know, locked in with what Frank Reich is trying to do. That's something that jumped out with me when he was behind center.
One of the things that I observed from just following all the Jet reporters, including you, Rich, who were there, is that Geno Smith was taking chances, throwing the ball downfield. That this was like a foreign concept for anyone who's watched the Jets, actually watching a quarterback attempt the deep pass down the field. I know A.D. Mitchell came down with what was called the play of the day. Can you describe that play and just some of the other, deep throws downfield that you saw?
the AD Mitchell play was in a 7-on-7. It was actually underthrown, and Mitchell made a really nice adjustment to come back for it. So that was that. You know, Geno was fine. I think he was 4-for-5 in team drills, throwing a lot to the tight ends, and which was interesting to see in Ruckert and Jelani Woods. Remember him? He was like stuck on the bottom of the roster last year, but I think he's getting a real chance now that Frank Reich is the OC because he knows him from Indianapolis. So you saw mostly tight ends and running backs involved in the passing game. Isaiah Davis made a bunch of catches out of the backfield. And, you know, Geno should have been picked off on one play. It was in the 7-on-7s. He threw it right into Nashon Wright's hands. It was a gift interception. Wright did a nice job of undercutting the route, and he just dropped the ball. And
so they still can't make interceptions is what you're telling
me. They still can't make interceptions, and that was a throw. I mean, A.D. Mitchell kind of raised his hand as if to say, you know, that was kind of on me.
Yeah.
Checking into it a little bit later, I think Wright really made a good play and undercut the route. And so maybe a little miscommunication there with Geno and the receiver, but that should have been an interception. So the interception curse continues.
Jake, I'm curious because, you know, you and I come at it, even though we're a little different, from a similar prism versus a pure reporter. And I'm not going to lie to you, I'm not worried about it, but my first instinct, all right, you're talking about the tight ends. Well, the one tight end I want to see catch the ball wasn't out there because he had surgery, not a major procedure. He should be fine. But Jake, when you saw the news on Kenyon Sadiq, I mean, tell me you don't have that flashback like, oh God, here we go. Like you had to think that on some level. I know I did for a second.
Without question, that you're just thinking, wait, what? He had surgery. Anytime you hear surgery, I don't care if it's minor or not, you get concerned. I actually pulled part of Glenn's answer to that, so I'll play it for those who missed it, and then we can react. This was Aaron Glenn talking about the injury to the 16th pick in the draft, Kenyon Sadiq.
Sadiq had a minor procedure, so he won't be out of practice today. He had a minor procedure, something that he dealt with, and we knew about, right, going to his last year of college, and he dealt with doing rookie minicamp, and we want to make sure we get it done right after rookie minicamp, so he'll be ready to go doing training camp.
I'm not going to be concerned if he's ready for training camp, but that's a position that you've seen. Mason Taylor missed some time last year. I think it maybe hurt his development early on. Like, tight end is really tough as a rookie. There's so much you got to do. And this guy was basically a one-year starter at Oregon. So my concern is, if he doesn't get a full training camp, does that hinder his development? But if he's ready for training camp, I'm not going to panic in late May. That's kind of how I view it, but you never want to hear that, you know, a guy who used the 16th pick in the draft already needed to get any sort of procedure, surgery, whatever.
Yeah, but I got a question here, and again, I'm not trying to cause problems, but when Aaron just said we knew about it, okay, that's good. So you go in eyes wide open, got it, and you elected not to have it during rookie minicamp, wouldn't you rather have it a month or so ago so he's ready for OTAs, so the timeline is more absolute being ready for training camp? I mean, why are we waiting on this?
Yeah, a couple of things there. One, he played with it last year at Oregon. He actually missed a game because of it, fought through it for a number of games during last season. So everyone knew about it during the draft process. And I think the thought originally was maybe he would try to get through the year with it, you know, going, you know, play. And so after rookie minicamp, they just decided let's just get it done now. And he will be ready for training camp. Okay. I've been told there's absolutely no doubt he will be ready for training camp. He was there yesterday. He was on the sideline watching every drill. I'm sure he's taking the mental reps, like, you know, coaches love to use that phrase. They're taking mental reps. But there is no – it's a little bit of a concern because of all the reasons you guys just mentioned. This is a rookie who has not played a lot at that position. These are important mental reps, and not mental reps, the physical reps, to be out there on the field running routes, catching passes from Geno Smith. That's important. That's why they do this stuff in the spring. They don't do it for fun. And so he's going to be a little bit behind when he gets to training camp. There's no doubt about it, but he will be ready for training camp.
Between this and Mitch, I'm like, we don't need this injury stuff, man. Come on, man. Let's get to the NBA Finals. And let's get to camp.
Weird injuries too, BT. We're talking about a pinky on Mitchell Robinson and a hernia, which you don't hear about that often for NFL players. Like, that's a random. It's not like an ankle or hamstring.
I think it's one of those sports hernia things.
Yep.
So, he'll be ready to go.
In terms of what the offense looked like without him, Rich, you already brought up Jelani Woods had a bigger role, of course. We know Jeremy Ruckert was extended before the year even ended. And then there's Mason Taylor, who I know Aaron Glenn said that he would pick him as a guy who could take the biggest leap from last year to this year. Did you get a sense that Frank Reich is going to be heavily reliant on using multiple tight ends and we're going to see a lot of Mason Taylor in this offense?
Yeah, I mean, but of course that could have been the concentration yesterday. They might have just decided to dial up some plays for the tight ends. So, I mean, this is the time of year you want to experiment and try different stuff. You know, I went back and did a lot of research on Reich in his last couple of coaching stops. He was not a big multiple tight end guy. I mean, he ran mostly 11 personnel in Carolina and then his last year in Indianapolis. However, I think he knows that he adjusts to the personnel, which is what any good coach does. And I think he was the guy who was on the table, you know, screaming, let's draft Sadiq. He was the Sadiq guy. He was the driving force behind that draft pick. And you saw the video when they got him with that phone call. Frank was, he was on cloud nine. And so he will use multiple tight end. You will see 12 personnel. You will see some 22 personnel. And so they also have, let's not forget about Andrew Beck, you know, the H-back, you know, he made some plays yesterday. I think he could be a factor as some sort of formation. So Reich will utilize the talent.
Guys, at the end of the day, isn't it always about adaptability for coaches? And I've leaned that we all have basketball on the brain, so I think you guys will appreciate the example here. You know, Pat Riley's with the Lakers. They're trying to run you out of the gym, you know, win 130 to whatever. Comes to the Knicks, it's a half court, try to get to 85 points, completely different style. And then with Miami, it was a little bit more of a hybrid where he got some guys that can move a little bit and kind of in between what the Lakers and the Knicks were doing. By no means am I saying that Frank Reich is Pat Riley, but if you're not adaptable as a coach, you really don't have much of a chance to succeed, right?
That's been my biggest issue with the Jets for a while and how it's like, oh, and last year, Aaron Glenn was very defined and, you know, this is our brand, how we want to play, smash mouth football. And then when someone asked him about, well, the league is kind of trending towards being able to throw the ball, he's like, well, look at the Eagles, and uses like a historic outlier, great team that ran the ball. So I just, yeah. I hope the coaches that Glenn has deployed and him himself now taking over the defense is way more adaptable to the players he has and very game plan specific to the team that they're playing. I feel like the Jets are, at times have been so stuck in their ways. They've not adapted to the modern NFL where it's about strategy. It's about X's and O's. It's not just about rah-rah having the team ready to go. That's only part of the job. That's not the whole job, if that makes sense.
Well, it does. And Rich, I want you to jump in on this. To be fair, you know, you could go in with the most open-minded, you know, non-averse in terms of being adaptable coach. But if you have, you know, limited players who have one skill set and the other side of the coin, it's barren. Like they just can't adapt, even if you're willing to. So I guess the question, Rich, has it been more of a dearth of multi-purpose players or just a stubbornness from the coaching ranks? Do you think?
I think two of the buzzwords that I keep hearing from players this spring on both sides of the ball are like just flexibility, versatility. You're going to see it on defense because of the type of scheme they're going to run. I think and this is coming from players. Last year, they were just trying to, you know, run the system. And this was Steve Wilkes. Got to run our system, maybe putting some square holes into round pegs, not, you know, or the other way around. But not quite working this year. What I get from players is that they're going to try to play to the player's skill set. They're going to be a hybrid defense. They're going to come out in a 3-4. They're going to use some four-man line. You're going to see guys like Onyemata moving in different spots down the line. You're going to see, Harrison Phillips and Tavondre Sweat maybe moving in different spots. And so same thing on offense. And I got that from Garrett Wilson yesterday. The way he was talking, the word he used, and I thought it was very interesting the way he used it. He goes, Frank Reich's system is player empowerment. He feels like he might have more players will have more say in what is being done instead of just being told, this is the way we're doing it. Go out and run it. Mm-hmm. It sounds like in terms of like running pass routes, there'll be more ability to adjust, make side adjustments based on coverage. And Reich is encouraging that. He's teaching that, whereas maybe in the past, not so much.
It looked like we even saw that from – I know you're talking about the offense there, Rich, but it seems like we're getting that from Pons early on as well. And we all love the draft pick. I mean, the kid can hit. He's a gamer, great instincts, but they've got him in the slot. They're getting him outside. And at least the reports – and I know it's just reports at OTAs. That's all we can react to, though. It seems like he's already very – very tuned in, you know, to the different schematics. They're very different jobs, as we all know.
Yeah.
You know, so that's a defense. You mentioned some of the big boys up front, but even Pond seems like they're going to mix and match and throw them all around the field, which I love. I love that stuff.
Yeah, they're going to cross-train him inside and outside. My gut tells me he's going to end up inside as a nickelback. Just my gut, but that's just what I think, just talking to some people. But I think they'll try him in both spots for sure. I think another guy who's really versatile is Minkah Fitzpatrick. We don't, you know, we haven't talked to him since he got signed, but I think he would like to see, like, an expanded role, like playing some nickel, you know, in that three safety nickel, like a big nickel look, and not be just a free safety. So you might see him move around and do different things as well.
So getting back to the Geno Smith conversation, an excellent reporter named Rich Cimini asked Geno Smith about a certain comeback that he could cap off with the Jets. So we'll play you the full exchange and then talk more about Geno's redemption with the New York Jets.
Geno, people always love a great comeback story. So with you, have you allowed yourself to think, like, how cool it would be if you were the guy, you know, to get this thing turned around here, considering you were here so many years ago and come back? And like,
yeah, I mean, that'd be like a story in a movie, right? You know what I mean? It's kind of like one of those superhero movies. But, you know, my life is based on reality, and we got to focus on, like I said, getting better every single day. You know, God has blessed me to play in the league this long and to have an opportunity to come back here. You know, I'm very, very grateful for that, because they don't come too often. You know, these opportunities, you have to cherish them. And that's the way I look at it. I really cherish this opportunity. I really look forward to, again, just going to practice tomorrow and trying to get better. And that's the way I'm going to treat this entire year and the rest of my career.
It's hard not to hear that and really root for Geno. He's tugging on the jet. The jet button's the right way there. I mean, I really would love to see him have that 2015 Fitzpatrick season, ironically. Rich, what did you think of the answer there to the question that you asked him?
I still find it surreal that he's still the quarterback of the Jets right now. Mm-hmm. I mean, in that very same room where he was standing behind that podium 13 years ago, I vividly remember him doing his draft, you know, his day after draft press conference. And I just see the maturity, how much he's grown since then. I mean, look, we've all matured, you know, when we were 22 years old and so forth. I think Jake is still 22 years old, I think. He was at that day when he got drafted. I mean, he was sour. Remember, he fell out of the first round. You know, he almost left the draft in New York City because he was so pissed off. And so he came in there kind of like with a, you know, like a little moody, a little chip on his shoulder. I just see a guy who's evolved as a person, as a player, very mature. Players are raving about him. He seems like he's all in. So, you know, positive signs so far.
To me, there seems to be an intersection of perspective and appreciation. Now, that only goes so far if you're beyond your physical prime. And I'm not saying that he's in the middle of his physical prime. He's probably more middle back end, but he's not out of it. So he's still a viable athlete. And I think when viability meets a deeper appreciation for what you've been through, a willingness to help, share, communicate, lead, you know, that could be a pretty potent combination. It doesn't mean it's going to lead to 12 or 13 wins, but it very well might be a situation where, you know, a year or two down the road, whomever the eventual quarterback is going to be that takes over him, maybe it's Klubnik, maybe it's Arch, maybe it's somebody else, the Jets could be a much healthier organization just because of Geno's newfound appreciation and maturity, even if he doesn't play great football.
Yeah, I agree with all that, BT, but really with Geno, it comes down to you have to protect him. And I know that goes for every quarterback, right? It's like he's better when he's protected. But if you crunch the numbers and you dive in, like I've dived into these numbers, especially with him, the difference between like him throwing under pressure without any pressure, the disparity is so much greater than the average quarterback in the league. So for him, pass protection is essential.
Do they have the offensive line? I know fans, we point to the O-line, Rich, as, you know, one of the strengths of the team. Another year of Armand Membu. Olu now coming into his own in year three. Tippmann, I know he wasn't there yesterday, but he, by all accounts, he's someone that you feel really good about going forward. Do they have the offensive line that could protect Geno Smith this season?
I think it'll be good enough. I mean, you got two tackles who you drafted really highly, and I think they're good. So I think a lot of it is scheme and play calling that goes into that as well. And I think, and short answer, yes, I think they can protect him.
I also think that their ability to, I know I've said this a few times, but all the guys that run 4-4. So, you know, you've got to, if you're playing the Jets, you've got to respect the speed, obviously. And if the pace is right and, you know, you move quickly, you don't give a chance for substitutions, which means those lighter bodies are on the field, which means the big boys up front should be able to push the opponents around. So, listen, this is all connected. We've already hit it. It's connected to Reich's theories and principles, the ability for Geno to see what's in front of him, check out a certain stuff, and just, you know, run the ball, stay balanced. And I know it's early and I'm optimistic, but I actually think that I think we're going to sit down and watch the Jets offense and be like, okay, hey, 27 points, 30 points, more times than not in the last X amount of years. That's what
let's go. I love the optimism, VT.
I do. Jet up. Let's go.
Jet up. Let's go, baby.
Well, I mean, Rich, Reich is among the leaders in no huddle over the last few years. So I think you're going to see that as a staple in the offense.
Just following up just on the offense, I actually, Rich, for the first time maybe ever, I can't think of a year that I actually feel more confident at this point in the offense being better than the defense. I don't know if that means the offense is going to be great, but I just have a lot more questions about the defense than I do the offense, because just look at the amount of roster turnover, the different starters that are going to be playing on the defense compared to the offense. The offense added talent with a base that already had Breece, Garrett Wilson, and a solid O-line. I think there's way more questions about the Jet defense than there is the offense right now.
Well, yeah, you know, it's an interesting comparison. More new faces on defense, so that would lead to questions, but yet a lot of those new faces on defense are experienced guys who've been around the league, whereas on offense, you have fewer new faces, but the new faces are young guys, like Omar Cooper Jr. is going to have a big role. Kenyon Sadiq's going to have a big role. You got a quarterback who, you know, with Geno, it's like, all right, but he's coming off a bad year. He's actually coming off one bad year and one mediocre year. So, you know, what are you going to get out of him? And so there are some questions on offense for different reasons than defense. But so I think the offense is going to be a work in progress. I think it might take a few games before they get going, just because you have so many young players and a new system and a new quarterback and a new play caller. That's going to take a little bit of time.
Well, isn't that why we debated to the degree that we did, you know, Bailey, Reece, Bailey trade out. I mean, if we're talking about young defensive players who are going to have to step up. I mean, you know, I know you can't really deduce a whole lot from yesterday, Rich, I get that, but how do you look physically? What kind of burst did we see? You know, what does he stand out? I guess, even though it's, you know, non-pads, does he stand out a little bit?
I didn't see a whole lot of, you know, I mean, I couldn't really, only a few plays stuck out to me on defense. So I didn't get a good feel for what they were doing on defense. I was focusing mostly on the offense. Mm-hmm. And so the only thing I saw on defense was the Nashawn Wright drop, you know, dropped interception. But yeah, so, I mean, Bailey's going to be playing a lot. I mean, he's going to be starting at rush linebacker. I mean, so when they're in a 3-4, you're going to see him right up there on the line of scrimmage as their rush linebacker. I think Joseph Asai will probably be the other linebacker the way they go. And a lot of movement, a lot of different looks, a lot of rotating of players.
Love it. Comments, questions, your super chats, we'll make sure we address those. If you're watching the show live, thank you. Click the thumbs up button. That's the like button. Make sure you are subscribed to the Jets Collective YouTube channel. We also post the show in audio form on Apple, Spotify, and iHeart, wherever you get your podcast. So make sure you check out the show and subscribe there. Shout out to Chad, who I see wrote in first live Jets Collective. Thank you guys for taking the time to make this show. Go Jets. Chad, we appreciate you. Some other Jet news. Darren Mooji's been busy for late May. He made a trade sending Herb Charles to the Seattle Seahawks. And Rich, my first reaction was I'm shocked they got anything for Herb Charles, a 2028 conditional seventh rounder for a guy a couple of years ago was really good on special teams.
Yeah, anybody can be traded in the NFL, right? Yeah, I mean, it just, that was not on my bingo card when you're talking about possible trades. He goes to a team. He actually goes to like an outstanding special teams unit. He goes from one to the other. And I thought he was on a Pro Bowl trajectory a couple of years ago. He made a bunch of big plays in 24 until he had that knee injury toward the end of the year. I think it was week 14 against Miami, and never got back last year. I'm assuming he's healthy. He passed the Seattle physical to validate the trade, so he's healthy. He'll get a chance there to play for an outstanding special teams unit. And this tells me that the Jets really believe in Arian Smith and Quantez Stiggers and Kenny Nwangu as their gunners, because that's what Irv Charles was. And so they felt he was expendable because of these other young players. And that's why they went ahead and made that trade.
I'm just fascinated. Like, my reaction, I'm just going to be honest, is like, all right, whatever. I mean, that doesn't really matter to me very much because I don't think it really impacts the Jets that much. But I do find it fascinating, like, from Muji's perspective, like, the impetus, and you just gave us a couple of names, and that is the impetus, I'm sure. They've got three guys they believe in. But, like, where does that idea even pop up? Like, let me see if I get a seventh rounder for sure. Like, I love the thought process. What sparks that, Rich?
Yeah, in that particular case, I don't know, but that could have been John Schneider just calling up Muji and saying, "Hey, man, what are you doing with Irv Charles? We need another wide receiver / special teams guy. What would it take to get him?" It could have been initiated by Seattle. It could have been initiated by the Jets. I'm not sure in that particular case, but Muji's phone is always available. He's always taking calls, and so. Yeah, I mean, it's that one came out of the blue. I mean, no one – I thought Irv Charles's reaction was interesting on social media, on Instagram. He posted, "Outta here."
Which annoyed me, by the way, because how did the Jets do anything wrong to Irv Charles? They gave him an opportunity. Unfortunately, he got hurt. They still brought him back with a new regime coming in. Like, what is he taking a shot at the Jets for? The Jets did nothing wrong to him.
Yeah, I reached out to him for comment. I did not hear back. And so I don't – that kind of indicates that he was unhappy here. Maybe he felt he was ready to come back last year and never got the chance to come off IR. That could possibly be part of it. But, hey, look, he's going from a last-place team to the Super Bowl champions. And, Jay Harbaugh is the special teams coach there. He's really good, as we all know. And so – I'm sure it'll be a good situation for him.
Speaking of special teams, did we see any kicking yesterday, Rich?
Oh, man. Well, it was really, as I said, it was really windy. I think Youngway Koo, we know the Jets signed him, obviously. Cade York is injured. So they think he'll be back next week, Cade York. It doesn't seem to be a long-term injury. But, Koo came in, and I think he hit a 47-yarder. He had a good day, and the other guy, Lenny Craig, did miss one, and he doinked another one. Oh, but like I said, it was really windy, so it was tough sledding for the kickers.
Youngway Koo was really good a couple of years ago. He hasn't had a lot of success the last couple of years, which is why he's available. Everyone remembers the infamous kick he had in primetime with the Giants, but he's a local guy. He's been a Pro Bowl kicker before. I don't hate the idea of just bringing him in for competition with Cade York. Like, I'm not convinced that Koo's necessarily the guy for the Jets, but we've talked about the kicking thing a lot on this show. Like, I'm glad they at least added someone who's done it somewhat recently.
I hate it. Yeah. I'll get it after Rich. I hate it, but go ahead, Rich.
He's an 85% career kicker on field goals. He's made, I think, one or two Pro Bowls, but sometimes kickers just lose it. He's not that old. He's only 30 or 31. And sometimes they just lose it. And I have a feeling that the Jets kicker for 2026 is not on campus yet.
BT? Yeah, I hope you're right. I've always had an affinity, like, whether it's Volpe or even when I was real young, like Mazzilli, even though I'm not a Mets fan. Joe Torre coming back to manage the Yanks. Like, I love the local stories. I've always gravitated to them. Mark Jackson with the Knicks, all that stuff, right? And even Pitino coming out of St. John's. But I got to tell you, I know he's local, as we said before. I know some of you guys play golf. I have gone back and forth golfing lefty, golfing righty. I'm an absolute disaster. And I've actually had such a disaster. I've had situations where I have swung and off the tee, and the turf has gone further than the ball. I cannot have a guy on, if you could believe that, I can't have a guy on my team who missed the ball and take the turf. I just can't have him on my team. I don't want him in the building. I'm not trying to sound extra harsh. Get rid of him. Get him out of here. I'm not interested.
Well,
not interested.
Like I said, I don't think the kicker's on campus yet. And, they've already employed four kickers this year. They cut the kid from BYU. And so I get ready for some revolving door musical kickers. I think we might be back into those phase of Jets special teams.
What if he just doesn't miss another kick, though, BT? He has an amazing summer. He's great in the preseason. You're still out on coup.
I'm out. I can't do it, man. Nope. Go kick for the Giants if somebody gets hurt for the Giants. Again, I'm out. I've made my case, and I'm not trying to be disrespectful. Out.
I love the hard stance. I do appreciate the take.
Comments. So long, coup.
Yes.
Comments, questions, super chats. If you have questions at the end, we will certainly get into those. We have a prize pick lineup that we'll talk through in a moment. But Rich, interesting text from you in our collective chat this morning. You spoke with a scout about Brendan Sorsby, who may or may not be in the NFL's supplemental draft coming up in a few weeks. What did you learn about the Texas Tech quarterback and whether or not the Jets potentially are going to be intrigued in selecting him in the supplemental draft?
Well, it seems like he's heading towards the supplemental draft. The deadline to apply is June 22nd. You know, the NCAA, you know, shot down his appeal to get his eligibility restored. You know, he's appealing through the court system. I don't see how he wins that. It's pretty ironclad. Talk to a scout about him just based on pure football ability. Forgetting about the off-the-field stuff, the scout I talked to, who studied him very closely during last season, thought he was a third-day draft pick, you know, somewhere between the fourth and sixth round. Wasn't overly impressed with him. He's listed at 6'3". The scout told me he's probably closer to 6 foot or 6'1".
What?
Yeah. Good athlete, but kind of reckless when he runs with the ball a little bit. You know, he put up some good passing numbers, but this scout was not that high. This scout said it would be like, you know, they have that guy on the roster, Cade Klubnik. That's what he compared him to. So now this scout is not affiliated with the Jets. I just want to make that perfectly clear. Mm-hmm. This was a guy who was independently scouting and saw this guy and said, you know, was not overly impressed with him. I think I've heard he could go as high as the second round in the supplemental. I don't think anyone would take him with a first round pick.
No.
Based on the way the Jets feel about their quarterback situation, I'd be a little surprised if they took him, you know, in the third or fourth. And we haven't even talked about the gambling stuff. Have you guys like dived into like?
I have.
Yeah. I mean, this is some thousands and thousands of bets. And he said, oh, they weren't big bets, you know, small bets between $10 and $50. But this guy was betting on Turkish basketball and Romanian soccer, the Nathan's hot dog eating contest. I mean,
well, I've done that too, to be fair.
I mean, that's concerning to me, because if I'm drafting a quarterback with like a first or second round pick, he's going to be my face of my franchise one day. I don't want to have to worry about all that stuff. I mean, that's a hard enough job as it is, being thrown into that pressure cooker in a place like New York. I mean, what if his coping mechanism for handling pressure is putting down some bets? You know, I don't want to. That's me. I wouldn't take the chance. But like I said, from a pure football standpoint, the one scout I talked to, who I have a lot of respect for, saw him as more like a day three pick.
I would definitely do a third round. Pardon me. I would think about doing a third round. I would definitely do a fourth round, and then obviously beyond that. Although I got to tell you, I'm a little rattled when you say that the scout said he's closer to 6 feet than like usually it's an inch. You're talking a couple of inches. So I watched a lot of film too. I'm not a scout. Don't pretend to be. But just the very like cursory level profile, at least what I thought it was, 6'3", 235. I know he ran a 4.65 40. He's big. He's strong. Obviously, you've got to reconcile the gambling stuff. But, hey, listen, maybe the silver lining is the Turkish basketball, I don't know, Australian golf, whatever else he's betting on there, cricket over in India, I don't know. But when you follow the sharps, which I'm sure he was, maybe that's a deeper level of intelligence, provided he got the right information, that could actually behoove him as the eventual quarterback or leader of the Jets. Bottom line is this, he went to rehab. I'm a man who believes that if you attack the rehab with true vigor, you can be rehabilitated, but you got to be able to play. That scouting assessment worries me a bit. I would still take a flyer on the kid.
But if you're going to invest a third or fourth rounder in him, you have Klubnik already. You just picked Klubnik.
Yeah, but I don't know if he could play, Rich. Just because everybody says we have Klubnik. I know we have Klubnik, 4 for 4, 4 for great. Gino says he can spin it. I've heard that Bryce Petty can spin it. Kellen Clemens can spin it. I am in the business of getting as many quarterbacks on the field to see, all right, who is actually good. I have hope for Klubnik. I know he's got it upstairs. I have no doubt about that. I don't know if the kid could play, and I'm not going to take the cheese just that easily. Been burned too many times, guys.
Yeah, I would concern. I mean, he's betting on his own team at Indiana, and so like he knows he's violating rules there, and he's doing it anyway. I mean,
but he's
everybody.
Betting, but Rich, he's betting to win. I know you know that, but he's betting. He's not betting on the Hoosiers to lose. He's betting on the Hoosiers to win. I'm not condoning it, but I think that context matters a little bit.
Yeah, I would say this for sure. The Jets will do a thorough job of vetting his background before they come to a decision. And I think that draft would be what, like in mid-July, you know?
July 20. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. July 22nd, I think they said.
So I think the Jets will have a clear decision based on all the information they got. And look, their scouts have already, they saw him at Texas Tech when they went down and scouted Bailey. Sorsby was there, you know, that day. I don't know. Yep. I don't know if he was throwing or whatever, but they probably had some interaction with Sorsby. You know, the Jets have scouts who go to University of Cincinnati the last couple of years. So they have reports on this guy. Mm-hmm. And so now they're just going to have to dig deeper before they make a decision. I just wanted to pass along what one particular – and again, it's one man's opinion. Everyone has a different opinion. Scout, that's what makes scouting so great. Everyone has a different opinion. But that was one man's opinion. He just thought he was just a guy.
So my biggest question is, let's say in this scenario, the Jets actually really like – him as a player, right? Not talking about the personality stuff. Like in the pre-draft process for a normal draft prospect, you get a chance to meet with that player. You can bring him into your facility for a visit. What are the rules for the supplemental draft? Because I've never actually paid any real attention to it in the modern era of football here. Like, could the Jets bring him into one Jets drive and actually do like a pre-supplemental draft visit? Can they have dinner with him like they did with David Bailey? Like, what are the rules for a supplemental pick?
Yeah, I think what he would do if he gets into the supplement, I think he would have a pro day. So, you know, all the teams who want to go can go and watch him up close. And I do think they would allow a certain number of like private visits to a facility or, you know, the kind of visits you just described, Jake, like the Jets did with Ty Simpson down in Alabama. They took him out to dinner. And so I certainly think there would be a number that they're allowed to do with that.
Because you can't take him unless you really vet the personality. It's New York. It's the gambling stuff that's going to follow him. Like, you got to make sure he really has his gambling problem figured out, and he's the right guy. That was a big issue with the Mekhi Becton pick in a COVID year. The Jets used that as an excuse that we didn't really get a chance to do our due diligence. They blamed part of the Zach Wilson disaster on, oh, well, you know, it was a COVID season. Didn't really get a chance to meet with him as much as we'd like. Like, you got to really, especially a quarterback in New York, you got to vet the heck out of the kid if you're going to use any sort of notable draft pick on the guy.
Yeah, the supplemental stuff is really fascinating. I'm quite candidly, I've learned a lot about it just trying to educate myself in the last couple of weeks. Really, when it first came up, probably maybe a month or so ago, I should say, like, you always know it's there potentially. We know about Dave Brown. We know about Rob Moore, Chris Carter out of Ohio State. He was the best one ever. It was born in 1977. It's an avenue for kids who are ruled ineligible, blah, blah, blah. But it's different receiver, pass rusher, linebacker, corner. I think we could all agree with this. And, Jake, I think it's an outstanding question. And, Rich, good answer. That, you know, if you're a quarterback, like, it's got to be a deeper connection, a more meaningful, you know, exploration of the character and the fortitude and the resilience of the young man, especially in this city.
Yeah. How about Jimmy Johnson? He took Steve Walsh in the supplemental one year right after he drafted Troy Aikman, number one. That's your theory. Take as many swings as you can. And then you turn around like a year or two later and he trades Steve Walsh. You know, he got like $2 on the dollar. He got so much back for Steve Walsh. I think he traded him to New Orleans. So that turned out to be a great investment for them during that beginning of that Cowboy dynasty.
I almost forgot Bernie Kosar was a supplemental pick as well. Yep.
Today's Jets Collective is presented by Prize Picks. Since we opened our show, guys, talking about Kenyon Sadiq, I figured we pull up Sadiq's numbers over at Prize Picks and if the injury is going to impact whether or not we'd go more or less on his future numbers here. Again, download the Prize Picks app, click the link in the description for the Jets Collective, and use that code HMA. You put $5 and you get $50 in lineups immediately. BT, I'll start with you. Would you go more or less on Sadiq's touchdown number there at 3.5 receiving touchdowns.
I'm going to go more for a couple of reasons. Number one, his talent is off the charts. Number two, you know, there's other guys who are going to have to eat, which could actually take away from those numbers. But I think the focus on Garrett, Breece out of the backfield, Cooper, lesser extent, Mason Taylor, I could see him, you know, in the red zone getting some jump balls against smaller guys. And, you know, provided he's healthy, I'm not too worried about the surgery with, you know, that we just talked about earlier. If he's not over 450 yards, four touchdowns would be really good for a rookie tight end. You know, where he was drafted and the expectations and the all world speed and projectability, I would be disappointed. Doesn't mean that he couldn't do it in year two or year three. I'm going more for both.
I'm going to go under for both. And the reason is because not anything against him in particular, because I do think he has electrifying speed for that position and he has a lot of exciting potential, but he is fairly new to the position. He's only played it for a couple of years in college. And, you know, he is missing this time in OTAs. And like we said earlier, I do think it matters a little bit. And there are other guys out there like Wilson and Hall, like BT just said, and Mason Taylor. And so, and Cooper's going to get some balls at AD Mitchell. So I think this is going to be a learning year for Kenyon Sadiq. Bright future. Just think that there's going to be some growing pains.
James, what about you?
Yeah, I'm going to split the difference. Yeah, I'll go more on the touchdowns because I do think he's going to be such a weapon in the red zone. And I'll go less on the receiving number just because I think there's a lot of mouths, as crazy as this is to say about a Jets team, a lot of mouths to feed, including Mason Taylor, who I do think will play a bigger role. And the craziest stat I could share about Mason Taylor, and I'm sure, Richard, BT, you've heard this as well, he caught one touchdown pass last year, and the quarterback who threw it to him was Breece Hall. So I just think Mason Taylor actually getting our professional quarterback in Geno to throw passes to him, he's going to be able to have a much better year than most people realize.
Real fast, though. The other thing, too, I think the numbers are set really well, so that's kind of tough, more or less. I could easily go the other way and convince myself to do it, but you guys know I'm a big fan and I'm a big believer. But somebody with that speed, when it's under 450 yards total for the whole season, he's got the capability to catch one at his own 11-yard line and just basically go 89, 90 yards. You know, like, and I've never seen a Jet tight end. There's not many tight ends in the history of football that have, really nobody that have that kind of speed. And if you break a 70, 80, 90-yard run, granted, maybe wishful thinking, but just doing the math, now you condense that and 450, suddenly 350 with months to play. Like, you got to crunch numbers. I think they set the number. I'm still sticking over. I'm not changing.
Breece Hall is the only player on the Jet roster who has more touchdown passes than interceptions as a Jet. Because Geno had more picks than touchdowns back in the day. And, of course, Brady Cook had a lot more interceptions than touchdowns.
Hey, Kate Klubnik hasn't thrown an incompletion yet, though, for what it's worth.
Yeah, so
that's right.
Big things happening. Speaking of big things.
He's the new cult hero.
Speaking of big things, on the Jets' mind has been what's on our minds, the New York Knicks. This was Garrett Wilson yesterday talking about how he's rooting for the New York Knicks.
It's cool to see, and I'm glad I'm up here for it. I'm rooting the Knicks on like hell. And yeah, man, you know, that gives us a taste of what it might look like when we figure this thing out, which, you know, we're excited for the opportunity.
I think every Jet fan who is a Knick fan is enjoying this run because of how bad it has been for as long as it's been. So much like now the situation the Jets are in with this playoff drought, I can't even imagine what it would be like if the Jets had this type of run that the Knicks are on. But just the reaction from a lot of the players, and even I know Glenn spoke about it with you guys yesterday, Rich, it sure sounds like the Knicks are inspiring the Jets so far this offseason here.
Well, there's the obvious parallel to two New York teams who have gone 50-something years without a championship. And so, to me, that's the obvious one. Yeah, I think the players – I mean, all these guys like sports. And so they're watching the locals have a great postseason run. They're seeing the reactions on social media of all the fans, you know, the watch parties, you know, at Radio City, and although I guess the one outside the Garden is not allowed anymore, but they're just seeing the news coverage. You know, it's the lead story on the 6 o'clock news every night. It's just great when New York has a team like that to embrace. However, you know, and I thought Garrett was very articulate the way he explained that about how it excites him and so forth, and more power to him. But there is no comparison between where the Knicks evolution as a team and where the Jets are now, it's apples and oranges.
We're all drinking the Nick juice, man, and boys, it tastes good. Hey, solid, baby, solid.
I don't have a Nick's. Sorry, I gotta get me myself a
Nick's.
We'll
get you one by game one Wednesday. I promise. That. Yeah. I promise you that. Here's the thing, though. You can kind of get a loose correlation if you want, and now's the time to be optimistic. Trying to see, you know, the Jets with the Knicks, but not these Knicks. Maybe Tom Thibodeau's first year Knicks.
Yeah.
With Julius Randle, where during COVID, now that was very different. COVID, not everybody was playing hard. Not everybody was locked in. I get it. But that was a team that clearly overachieved, but then set the dominoes in motion to now add to that culture, get better players, and now have an expectation where the Knicks have been really championship viable for a couple of years. And now we're at this point. Hopefully they punch through. So I think the better thought would be, hey, can the Jets scrap to 9 wins and have that Tom Thibodeau identity and play hard and fight and not have a lot of penalties and maybe win a game or two they're not supposed to, and then put the wheels in motion to talk about the Knicks now, maybe in a year or two?
You nailed it, BT. I've been talking about this for a long time. When we do the losing every year and the tanking, like, you never get out of the rut. I've talked about how, like, the Jets, like, they're in, like, NFL hell. Like, people are like, oh, you never want to be, you know, 8-9 in the NFL. You'd rather be awful. No, if you're the Jets and you've just been nothing but losing, like, having some semblance of a foundation that you're laying, that's what Thibodeau did. He took a team that was with that win total was in the 30s, and he was able to get them in that first year overachieved. They won 40-something games, made the playoffs, and, like, that kind of started this build where, like, people actually wanted to play for the Knicks. You had a shrewd GM who then added more talent to the team. Like, the Jets had just been so bad for so long. A 9-8 year would be incredibly valuable, even if it means, oh, you can't get the top quarterback in the draft. They got to learn how to win. They can't just win four or five games every year and just magically turn it around one year.
Yeah, I mean, the Knicks, this has been a slow build. I mean, this is their fourth straight postseason. They've won 61% of their games over the last 4 years. So this didn't come out of the blue. They're going, like, each year they take it a different step higher. And I think if the Jets want to look at that, the thing they could pull away is, like, the blueprint on how to build a winner. You know, that it's methodical, that it's not an overnight fix. And it takes time to add the right players and build the right culture. And it's hard to believe we're talking about the Knicks in this vein because, I mean, God, they were the Jets, you know, back in the days when Dolan was, you know, too involved in meddling, and he finally made a great hire in Leon Rose. And if you're a Jet fan, you're hoping that, you know, Woody Johnson made the right hire in Darren Bucci.
Well, look at it. And I believe that he did, but it's got to bear the fruit of the quarterback eventually downstream. But Mucci's doing great so far. I think every Jet fan has good faith. You think about this too, like, even if the Jets are 7-10, let's go 7-10, and they don't have, like, that 6 or 7 game losing streak because, you know, you win a game or two each month, kind of. It's just there's a consistency when you walk in the building. There's an energy. There's a focus. The worst thing, and it happens to them every year, is that they're out of it by Halloween, and human nature and instinct, whether even though we hate when pro athletes do this, your level of attention to detail starts to wane. The meetings are less important. There's less spirit in practice. So the culture, which is a very nebulous word, but you know when you have it and you know when you don't, you know, even if you lose, you know, 10 times, but as long as it's not protracted and just 2 months or to end, it's useless after Halloween, there's value there. So it's going to happen eventually. And maybe this is the year where we start to take the step forward.
Yeah, I mean, it's when you're 0-4, which becomes 0-7.
Yeah,
I mean, it's human. I mean, the players say the right things. You know, we're into it. We'll get it turned around. But human nature, you know, you're going to slack off, and it's hard to turn that around. And so imagine, I haven't covered a meaningful game in, like, around Thanksgiving, and I can't remember the last time. So, you know, get to Thanksgiving. Wow. You know, that might be worth the parade through the canyon of heroes for the Jets. I mean, just get to Thanksgiving, for crying out loud. But it is a process, and the Knicks are showing that the process, it takes time. But if you do it right, you know, you bear the fruit, and we're seeing it right now for the Knicks.
You know what it is, too? And we've talked about Woody Johnson on the show before. BT, you got, and rightfully so, very strong opinions on the guy, and you're justified absolutely in feeling that way. I think 99% of the audience agrees with you. But the same things that are being said about Woody now, that was said about Dolan, too. And again, it really comes down to, can you hire the right people? In Dolan's case, it was Leon Rose and Tom Thibodeau, now Leon Rose and Mike Brown. But, like, that's the only way it truly changes. I like Darren Mucci. I got our questions about Glenn. But at least at the end of this year, I think we get a clear answer on Glenn, whether or not he's the guy. And then if he's not the guy, at least you're set up with three first-round picks, $150 million of projected cap space, a roster that does have some good young talent on it, including some pieces on the offensive line and hopefully an elite pass rusher now. Like, I could actually see the light at the end of the tunnel from a Jet perspective. But, yes, they got to get quarterback and coach right, but they at least have – like the mechanism to do it, if that actually makes sense.
It makes a lot of sense. But my biggest worry about Woody compared to Dolan, and we've done those comparisons on our individual shows, and there's a like it's pertinent. Like I can understand why people do it. It makes sense here. The difference, though, and I can't prove this, my fear with Woody, unlike Dolan, once Dolan finally got it right, he stayed out. And he always cut the checks. And by the way, credit to Woody. Woody spends a ton of money. It's not cheap. But my fear is that Woody is such a glory hound, and he's so desperate to be propelled that, oh, look, Woody Johnson's Jets, Woody. Dolan's laying out, and he's letting Leon get the flowers and Brunson and Brown and Tibbs before that. I almost feel like he would subvert it. I can't prove that. I hope I'm wrong, but that genuinely worries me. Like, if and when the Jets get it right, he's going to get frisky, like, oh, I'm not getting enough credit, and then it could go back to being what it's been.
Hey, Woody, he's spending a ton of money on a new weight room. That's not going to change your opinion of it. You know, God knows how much that's costing them. They're building like this new two-story performance center to replace the old weight room. So he's making the right additions to the building. Last year they had a new locker room, which is really cool, and the weight room I'm sure will be spectacular. But no one really cares about that. The fans don't care about it. They just want the product on the field is what matters. And that's where they've been coming up way short.
No doubt. If you guys have a question, if you're one of the 315 people watching live right now, write it in. Super Chats will cut the line. Hit the like button as well. That helps the algorithm show the show to more Jet fans. You're watching the Jets Collective live here on YouTube. Again, you can get the show on Spotify, Apple, and iHeart as well. Some Super Chats here. The Doc Jet fan starts it off. $10 Super Chat. Thank you very much, Doc. By any objective measure, the Jets' defense last year was atrocious, especially with communication. Glenn cannot blame everything last year on Wilkes. Give me a reason to believe 2026 will be different. Rich, give Doc a reason to believe.
Well, Doc's absolutely right. The communication last year was horrible. And I think they got a new quarterback on defense. DeMario Davis will improve the communication. He's the Mike linebacker. I think Jamie and Sherwood was just overwhelmed in that role last year, and it affected his play as well. So better communication in the front seven with DeMario Davis, better communication on the back end with Minkah Fitzpatrick, who's an experienced, savvy guy. So that'll help right away. I think there will be nothing lost in translation in terms of the play caller is the guy who – I mean, it's Glenn's defense now, so he doesn't have to talk to Steve. Well, he doesn't have to talk to another coach to enact what he wants to do. He's the coach, so he can just do it himself. Forget about Brian Duker. He's just the name defensive coordinator and name only. It's Glenn's show, and I think that will cut out the middlemen, so to speak, and I think that will streamline the communication.
I think the communication's paramount, but you know, let's also not forget that the Jets were running backups to backups out there in December. And we talk about that disparity in December, the point total, the point differential. I mean, historically inept. And when you're talking about the Jets and connected to anything historically inept, that's saying something, because most of what they do is genuinely or generally historically inept. But it's tough to gauge, like, you know, where do you separate the communication or lack thereof with guys who just, no disrespect, aren't true NFL players? I think they've got more of them this year, and with better communication, you're going to see a better defense. Not a great defense. It's going to be better.
Yeah, they're still short in talent in some areas. I mean, the secondary is a concern for me. You know, linebacker depth, you know, the pass rush, interior. You know, they still have some questions. We're not talking about the 85 Bears here, but I think they'll be more functional.
At least with the leaders they have. Like, I don't think they're going to – I know – you never want to say, oh, a team quit, because you never know for sure. But at times they look like a team that quit. Like the Cowboys game in the first half of the year when they still had Sauce, they still had Quinn, and they were quote-unquote trying to win at that point. Like there were moments where they just looked like they just gave up. And like that falls on the head coach, even if the defensive coordinator hiring made was atrocious as well. Like it just – those type of performances early when your season is supposed to be relevant, that can't happen. That was like week 5 of the season, for example.
Yeah. It's true. You nailed it.
Cisco, super chat here. Can someone shed some light on why reliable kickers like Falk are not kept over a couple millions? Anyone remember the 2024 season where we lost games? Yes, I remember that season well. Cisco,
Zuerlein.
God. I mean, Rich, we talked about this last week, and your clip of you sharing some insight on the contract that Falk got from the Falcons went viral on social media. I still, to this day, I don't know if I'll get it, and hopefully the next time Darren Mooji talks, he can explain the decision to not keep Falk.
You know, if Nick Falk were 2 or 3 years younger, I think the Jets would have offered him, you know, $4 million, $4.5 million guaranteed. I think they were just concerned about his age. You know, he's 41. Although, you know, performance-wise, efficiency-wise, he showed no signs of slowing down last year. He missed what? One kick the entire year. And so, again, I think we're all in agreement, right, guys? I think the Jets, they dropped the ball on that one. I would have gone the extra mile to keep Falk. Now they're going through this musical kicker situation. And I don't think they're real kickers on campus yet.
Well, but yeah, I got to push it a step further. Yeah, we're all on the same page that they dropped the ball, but like they embarrassingly dropped the ball with this. Think about what this is not the Mets with Pete Alonso, and the Mets dropped the ball with that as well, but yeah. That was a different level of evaluation. He's a righty, he's first baseman, he's 30, he's not a good athlete, not a great defender. Like, there were true base, and he was looking for a couple of $100 million, by the way. You know, there was an evaluation, and I saw both sides. You're talking about a team that's got gobs of money in terms of cap space for $1 million? Like, that, I can't reconcile that. Like, that's unacceptable, really. Yeah. And I love Mooch, and I know you haven't had the access to ask him this, but I need an answer to that. Like, he needs and I know you will deliver it, as will the others, a pointed question, respectfully. We need answers. He's got to speak to that, because as much as I'm kind of optimistic, you know, whether it's this revolving door, like, the Jets season cannot be sabotaged in September because they can't kick a 39-yard field goal from the left hash. Like, we can't go through that.
Yeah. So I agree. You're preaching to the choir.
He's right.
Getting worked up, man.
We've seen this too many times. Like, obviously, the Cisco super chat brings up the 2024 year where Greg Zuerlein single-handedly sunk their season. And we look back and just blame Aaron Rodgers. But the Jets season could have been so different if they won a couple of those close games early on. Maybe Robert Saleh actually makes it through that year, and who knows what ends up happening. But I go back to the 2019 and Adam Gase's debut game, Le'Veon Bell. And remember, they lost the game because, what was it, Devick or whatever, shanked a field goal and a couple extra points, and they ended up losing like a one-point game to Josh Allen and the Bills, and Darnold got mono, season's cooked. Like, it can happen quickly.
Weren't they winning 16-0 at the half, right?
Yes, C.J. Mosley was Lawrence Taylor until he got hurt.
He ripped his groin.
Vedvik. What's his name? Was it Vedvik? Kare, yes. Vedvik. What was,
yes,
his name?
Yes.
I think there was a funny story there. I think Adam Gase was, you know, in the pregame warmups, saw Vedvik miss a couple of kicks in the pregame, and told some people, "Oh my God, what are we getting ourselves into?" And then he goes out and misses the kick, and sure enough, I think that was it for Vedvik. I think he might have been cut the next week or something like that.
Can I tell you my all-time favorite Jets kicker real quick? Not Pat Lay. He was the first one I remember. I love John Hall, man. John Hall was a linebacker who was a kicker.
He was clutch.
Yes.
He kicked the big kick in Oakland to get him into the playoffs.
54-yarder, I think it was.
Yeah, and it was a bad snap, actually, and Tupa did a great job of getting that ball up. Yeah. And Hall smoked it, and he was a good kid. He was like Spicoli in Fast Times at Ridgemont High. I think that was his nickname on the team, because they called him Spicoli because he's kind of a beach kid from Florida who was a little hair was always disheveled a little bit, but he went out there and he just banged it through, and that brings back some memories.
Couple minutes left. Last chance to get your question answered. Shout out to Kyle Clifton, who, following up on the Sorsby conversation, says, "Your bets aren't derailing your media career, Jake." Yeah, that is correct. My bets on Joey Chestnut have not derailed the media career to this point, but we will see what happens this July 4th.
You've won on Joey?
Oh, you have to take Joey.
No, I know, but
he's
like,
the guy.
Put that like $5, or you go like a real bet on Joey.
The key is, I think, to parlay it with like him to win plus like him to break the hot dog record.
Yeah.
That, whatever it is that year. I've done it a couple times. It's a lot of fun.
That's funny.
This one is from Howard, who wants to know, depth on the O-line, .. is it an issue? ?
I can't listen. I would, Reg, you take the reins on this in terms of the depth chart here, but and I knew
checking,
it wasn't good.
Checking my depth chart.
Okay, I didn't think it was going to be financially plausible, so I knew they wouldn't do it. I was, even though he's always hurt, I was kind of hoping they were going to find a way to get ABT on a 1-year deal. Like, I was hoping that would happen. Could you imagine if he was, and it was always if, hopefully, maybe, but imagine throwing him out there, because he could play anywhere, really, with this group, with this core, and he actually stayed healthy. I don't know. The depth to me doesn't seem to be great, but not incredibly worrisome. Rich, where were you on that?
I think the depth at tackle is okay. They have Mitchell as a backup. Max Mitchell's back on a 1-year deal. They have Chooks, Okorafor. He didn't even play last year, you know, the veteran right tackle, but he's back. I think the depth is a concern on the interior. That's, you know, they got Xavier Newman, who is back, and, you know, he was playing guard with Tippmann out yesterday. And, you know, he's been around. He's played a little bit for sure, but he can play center as well. And, you know, I guess if Myers got hurt at center, they probably just move Tippmann back to center. And they drafted Inez Cooper out of Miami, you know, the rookie. He'll be their right guard. But I'd feel a little more comfortable if they had another swing guy, center slash guard, who had some experience.
I think that is spot on. And I do wonder, by the way, Parham's played center too, I think, Rich. So maybe he's an option.
He did early in his career. You know, right now he's their left guard, but he did play. And they picked up a tackle. They signed the guy from rookie camp, the former Saint, Landon Young, who's on the roster. So okay. He's played a little bit in the league.
Here's a super chat from HDO. Thank you, HDO. Do you think the team might trade Jamie and Sherwood and give Kiko Maragoa his spot? Last year he showed some promise in limited time.
No.
Wow, that was quick.
I mean, Sherwood is $15 million guaranteed this year. That's what they owe him. There is no team in the league that, not even Salah, who loves Sherwood, who believes he initiated the idea of moving Sherwood from safety to linebacker, not even the Titans would pay $15 million guaranteed. Now, the Jets are eating a lot of money on some other contracts, including like $8 million on Justin Fields. So I don't think they want to do that with a Jamie and Sherwood. So I think he'll be back this year. And I think the hope is that now that he's not the quarterback of the defense and they feel that it'll take some pressure off him, and having Demario Davis next to him will be a big help for him.
What if money wasn't an issue? And I know that it is. You laid it out well, Rich. I just to, you know, fully answer the question, is the talent comparable? I mean, is there a massive disparity?
No, they believe, they think Sherwood has talent. I do too. I think they gave him the contract. I mean, this regime, Muji and Glenn, gave him the 3-year, $45 million contract. So they must have seen something good on the tape. I think he's a little undersized. So if you put, what is he, like 215, 220 pounds, maybe 225. I think he tried to add some weight.
That's light.
When you're playing a 3-4, your inside backers are usually bigger than that. Yep. So you're playing a lot of downhill, and you know that's kind of light for an inside linebacker in a 3-4. So that would be a little bit of a concern, but I think the talent is there if he's used properly.
I think that's well said, and I like Jamie and Sherwood a lot. Like, it was a really cool story to see this guy change positions, kind of work his way, dealt with some injuries early in his career. I just hope that he could get back to being the player he was in 2024. My concern is Demario Davis is old. So if there's an injury there, what does that mean? Sherwood then has to go back to being the play caller for the defense? Because then what do you do? Because then you're back in the same situation. You didn't want him in the first place.
He would probably go back to that position.
All right. That is going to do it for another episode of The Collective here. Before we get out of here, though, reminder, come hang out with BT, myself, and some of your favorite Jet content creators, Jet reporters, Jet super fans all in one spot. Tickets are on sale now. For Gangrene Beach Club, you just go to gangrenebeachclub.com. It's just $25. Starts at noon, goes till 6. We'll be hanging out at Ocean's Casino all day long at HQ2. It's going to be nuts. I know Rich and Kaz are going to be duking it out with a chicken fight in the pool. So if you want to watch that, see BT in a Speedo. It's all going down on July 11th at HQ2.
Hey, maybe we're celebrating the Knicks championship, by the way.
That's right.
Come on, let's go.
I've been to that hotel, that Ocean Resorts. That's pretty nice. That's a nice spot there. So I was not partying at the pool when I was there last time. I think it was I was there for a Super Bowl Sunday event, and it was in a big theater at that hotel. And I actually watched the Super Bowl with Wayne Corbett. and our wife. Love Wayne. It was the Rams Patriots Super Bowl. So Wayne and I and our wives were at this event, and it was pretty cool, and it was a great facility.
Well, this This is going to be a lot less tame. I know Wayne can get after it a little bit, but this is going to be a little different speed than that day, Rich.
Yeah, I would pretty much say, yeah, that's going to be the case.
We just posted the link in the comments under the Jets Collective name there. So check it out. It's going to be a lot of fun. Looking forward to hanging out with BT Rich and some of your favorite Jet personalities all in one spot. Another episode of the Collective is in the books. Rich, BT, a lot of fun. Can't wait to talk more about what's going down at OTAs and everything else in Jetland.
No doubt. It's going to be, hey, we're inching toward it, boys, and we're here for the journey. The reception, I don't know that I've ever said this, but I want to say it now. The reception to this new endeavor has been phenomenal. It's going to grow and grow. And our objective is to be the show of record when it comes to the Jets. Now, you know, we're not going to say we're there yet. We're just starting. But with the guy on the screen in Rich, who knows everything about this team, and the two lunatics, the other guys who will know everything as well, and maybe say it maybe a little differently, it's been a nice start, and I can't wait to see where the show goes. And I appreciate everybody showing us some love here.
Ditto, everything he said.
Well said. Yeah. Going to be awesome. We're almost at 4,000 subscribers. So if you're new around here, click the subscribe button. That helps us continue to grow. Big shout out to our presenting sponsor, Prize Picks. Hope everyone has a wonderful weekend. Like the video, subscribe to the channel on your way out of here. Let's go, Knicks, and we'll talk to you next time.